Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to talk about how people can be healthier, but most people are not. A new study, very important. I'm going to spend a little extra time on it, from University of North Carolina. My guest in the second part of our program today is the same person you heard 2 days ago from a TED Talk, and that is Dr. Deborah Davis. We're going to talk about all the science involving what many people are really heralding as a great new technology, get you your internet faster, more places, but I consider dangerous the G5 towers. So we're going to look at this in depth and spend more time than normal with her on this. Also, a couple of audio clips I thought would be a benefit. One is that the real reason good people fail, by Robin Sharma. And listen carefully, because I think he's right on the mark on this. And then also, what are the single most important issues that we should all worldwide be concerned with that we're not? We're not doing anything. We may give lip service, we may talk about it, but we're not actually doing anything. We'll talk about that as well, and we'll share those top 10 and why each one's important and each one is impacting our lives, so that hopefully the more progressive people in this audience will share that with other people. We begin with the latest on health and healing. We've got a really packed show today. I will not be taking any calls. The prevalence of metabolic health in America is alarmingly low. Even among people who are normal weight, according to a new study from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hills, Gillingham School of Global Public Health. In fact, according to the latest studies, only 1 in 8 Americans is achieving optimal metabolic health. Now, you say, so what? Well, the consequences of not being metabolically healthy could make you die much quicker. You're more susceptible to type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. This was published in the current issue of Metabolic Syndrome and Related Disorders. And it's the latest information. Now, we're talking about 5 factors. Your blood glucose, that's your blood sugar. That's directly tied to whether you exercise or don't, and how much, how sedentary you are, and how much refined carbohydrate that you have in your diet. But also, it's involving triglycerides, the high-density lipoprotein, cholesterol, your blood pressure, and your weight, and your waist circumference. So, and this is without medications, because most people who are overweight are not on medications. When a guy has a big belly and it's hanging over his belt, it's considered normal when you're no longer in your 20s. But we're finding people of all ages now have too much of a belly, men and women, and that shortens your lifespan. So they took a look at 8,721 people in the United States over a 7-year period and found that we're really promoting a lot of chronic disease. In fact, you've heard me say that about, more or less, 10% of the American population are actively doing healthy things on all levels, not just with their diet, but on social issues, including environmental issues. They're more politically astute. They look for the truth. They're not afraid to do their homework. Here's what they say. Quote, researchers examined the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey data, and they found that the data revealed that only 12% of American adults are metabolically healthy, which means that that's only 27.3 million Americans are meeting recommended targets for cardiovascular risk factors management. So, all right, I'm off by 2%, but I believe that my 10% is more accurate because they did not take into account people involved in social issues, political issues, not as a partisan or in an ideologue or following one of these ideologies like Rush Limbaugh, but rather independent thinking. So when you add that into the equation, you're really down to about 5% who are doing all the different things in life with purpose and meaning that is constructive, and about 10% are living a healthier life, exercising, and trying to make the best choices, but trying to make the best choices from their conditioned mindset. In other words, whatever was given to them, that's what they're trying to make sense of. But when you refine that further and say, okay, you're eating a healthy diet. Are you meditating? No, I'm not doing that. Are you dealing with stress? Not very well. So then when we add those factors in, that comes down. Are you exercising 5 days a week? Or more importantly, are you exercising about 6 hours a week or 360 minutes? Most people are not. So factor in exercise, stress management, overall health, a plant-based diet, veganism, you're at 3%. Those who are also engaged in trying to do the best for their neighborhood and for their communities, who are conscious of issues, now you're back up to 5%. And those who are having a good diet but not connected with social issues, that's about 10%. And those who are doing enough on their diet and exercise to be in metabolic health, you're dealing with 12%. So when I'm giving figures, I'm always looking at the national surveys to see what they're including or excluding from their database. So these people are not going to live longer lives. They're going to die prematurely, and they're going to have diseases for at least half their life. From the University of Seville, which is in Spain, from the Department of Pharmacology at the University of Seville, comes new research upon the soursop. Sour, S-O-U-R, sop, S-O-P, one word, just the leaves. Now, you can get the fruit. The fruit's a little bit bitter. It almost tastes like a vanilla custard, but if someone put a little lemon juice on it. And it's indigenous to the tropics. In fact, when I go for a run in Jamaica, almost every mile I'm looking at cherimoya, which is a sweeter version, or the soursop. And they know that if someone is sick, they take the leaves and boil them up, make a tincture, and even on sores, apply the tincture, the liquid, or drink it. And then they're eating the soursop and cherimoya as well. We don't in the United States. We should. Because they found that it prevents the symptoms of fibromyalgia. Now, fibromyalgia is pain within the muscles. And that's extremely common. And that's why a lot of people take opiates and other painkillers. So the leaves are extremely important. And let me just give you the scientific name for the leaves. Annona, A-N-N-O-N-A, Muricata, M-U-R-I-C-A-T-A, and that's from the tree, it's a small tree, but very powerful, so something to help you. Also, frequent saunas are associated with a lower cardiovascular death rate in men and women. University of Eastern Finland and the university also in the state, and it says that this is published in British Medical Journal of Medicine, and it says that regular saunas, that would be about 3 times a week for about a half hour, lowers your risk of death from all cardiovascular disease in men and women, especially if you're 50 or over. That's very good, because saunas are great. They've been used for over 1,000 years, and saunas allow you to sweat, and in your sweat, you're allowing the toxins in the body to be eliminated. And if you properly hydrate yourself, and you should always go into a sauna with some high electrolyte drink. I would suggest taking lemon juice and watermelon juice and coconut water, mixing them together, and drinking that in some ice when you're in a sauna. Also, the moringa M-O-R-I-N-G-A. Some say it's moringa, others moringa. But either way, it displays a very powerful anti-proliferative effect on cancer cells. This is from the University of KwaZulu-Natal, which is in South Africa. So the South African study concluded that moringa has anti-proliferative activity against at least one type of cancer, and it's another reason to incorporate this vegetable into the diet. So it looked at esophageal cancer. That's a type of cancer diagnosed in many members of the South African black population. And to confirm the anti-proliferative effects of moringa, the researchers exposed an esophageal cancer cell line to different dilutions of the plant's crude aqueous extract, which is a water extract, and they also performed other tests to confirm that it has strong antioxidant quality, it can help prevent DNA damage, and it causes programmed cell death. All good. So whether you're going to use moringa or moringa, either way is good for you, and especially cancer. Now, mind you, this was published in the Journal of Medicinal Foods. Even though they tested it and it was effective on one cancer cell line, that does not mean it wouldn't be effective on others if they tested it. So when I see that something that is that powerful as an anti-proliferative, I'm going to assume that it's going to be the same for all other cancers in the body. So that's why I would include it. I mentioned yesterday that some research came out showing that chemotherapy speeds up the aging process. Well, today there is a new study from UCLA that shows that chemotherapy and radiation accelerates aging and reduces your body's function. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer. And it noted that when you have fatigue that is persistent and pain, and when you no longer have your memory, that's frequently because of the treatment for cancers, including breast cancers. And you're talking about radiation and chemotherapy. So what they will do, they will use this information, but then they'll try to find some other drug therapy to help with cognition and pain and fatigue, instead of simply saying, if we look at the whole history of cancer therapy, or since the war on cancer, which is over 45 years old now, and we look at how many people each year are diagnosed with cancer, what are we doing to stop that or prevent it? Nothing. And what is our success rate? And it's abysmal when you look at the actual number of people diagnosed with cancer and how many are having it reversed, and then ask, what is the science that shows the purported adverse effects that 50% of people dying of cancer die because of the therapy? And also, we should add in there, should oncologists or people involved in cancer, unlike other diseases, be allowed to buy the product, the chemotherapy agents, at wholesale, sell it to the patient, get their insurance to reimburse about 70%, let's say $13,000, and then the patient has to pay the rest out of pocket? That means that that does not include the doctor's visit. That does not include any hospital visits or hospital treatments. That's just the cost of the drug itself. And so when you get a chemotherapy, understand there are thousands of dollars in net profit being made by the oncologist. So the question is, A, is that ethical? Should we allow the privateering, profiteering, and privatization of such an important medical treatment? And secondly, if a person has, let's say, 200 patients, and they're seeing them every month, and you're giving a therapy every month that would cost a patient, let's say, about $12,000, and that's not unreasonable to what most people are spending. So let's just do the math. Let's say that you're charging $12,000, some it's much more than that, and you're doing it 12 months a year, so that's $144,000, and you've got 200 patients, then you're making $2,880,000 from those patients, not including your visits, not including the injection of the chemotherapy. You would not believe what they charge for simple procedures. Did you ever wonder why, when you're leaving a hospital, they put you in a wheelchair, but the moment you get to the door, you get up and walk away? Why not just get up and walk away from your room? You're already ambulatory. You're not running around your room in a wheelchair. You're walking. It's because they charge you for it. It's another way for a hospital to gouge. And now they have these consortiums. Most people are not aware of this. About 10 years ago, for a lot of physicians in the less than stellar high-end physicians like neurosurgeons, for example, they were not seeing their business grow. They were also seeing elevated malpractice insurance. Many of them were not finding that they could compete with the enormous amount of people getting into hospitals. So a group of people, mainly from Wall Street, hedge funds and equity partners, came in and they started to hire groups of physicians from all different disciplines. And the deal went something like this. We'll pay you a very nice salary. Let's say that you're normally making $300,000. We'll give you $300,000. We'll give you $400,000. And you don't have to pay malpractice insurance. And you don't have to split fees with the hospital. Well, for a doctor, that means that they don't have to do all this excess testing, and they get to keep a much higher percentage of what they earn. Oh, and you don't have to worry about billing and having six people just working in your administrative and booking. We're doing all that. So now a doctor goes into an office to where there might be 6 to 10 physicians, generally with multiple disciplines. They'll have an oncologist, cardiologist, neurologist, gastroenterologist, and OGBYN, psychiatrist. And now the prices are higher. They'll make sure that everything that is treated is covered by insurance. And these people make all that profit because they're using these black pools of investment where someone will give $5 million, $10 million to have a return on their money. And a guaranteed return is going to be in healthcare, pharmaceutical companies, pharmacies, hospitals, private and public and private. So it's a win-win except for the patient. It does not ensure better care, and even our existing system does not guarantee that you're going to have a positive outcome. You'll have whatever outcome happens to happen based upon the therapy you're getting. And what we've seen and what we're in the process of doing right now is updating Death by Medicine. I should have it done within the next 2 weeks. And we will, instead of publishing it as a book, as we did before, we will do it as a series of articles. And only statistics from mainstream medical organizations are being used. So there's nothing subjective. There's no opinions offered. It's just here are the facts. When you get your statin drugs or your bypass surgeries or your chemotherapy or radiation, here's the results of the success of that. And what you're going to see is that we are exemplary. We're terrific at saving lives and improving the quality of life of a person who's been in an accident. You get a severed finger, you get a cut, you get a gunshot wound, you fall off a ladder, you break a hip, you have a heart attack or stroke. We're very good at the state of art of diagnosing and treating trauma and emergency care, burn victims, for example, and microsurgeries. We're exemplary, and hence I commend that. Where we fail is in chronic care, arthritis, infections, the flu, cancer, heart disease. We fail miserably. The trouble is that the best that we have represents between 8 to 10% of all medical procedures. The vast majority are chronic care for pain and fatigue. And there's virtually nothing in the armamentarium to make a difference. So that's why it's to at least know. And none of the things they're offering now actually increases the quality of chronic care outcomes. We read thousands upon thousands of scientific articles, and that's we're up to date on all this, so just want to share that with you. So when we tell you that UCLA just came out with a study showing that chemotherapy and radiation causes you to die sooner, and then goes into the reasons why, it says, quote, a new study published in the journal Cancer noted persistent fatigue, pain, cognitive dysfunction in women who received treatments for breast cancer, including radiation, 3 to 6 years earlier. These findings are important because they provide further information about what might be happening after cancer treatment that impacts cognitive decline in some individuals. Well, you've destroyed a person's immune system. The chemotherapy and radiation both alter DNA, very damaging, and they shorten telomerase activity, which indicates lower, worse attention and motor speed. And in the case of cancer, breast cancer patients, they studied, and the women also experienced a reduction in telomerase. That's the enzyme I mentioned yesterday that helps maintain the health and mark the age of cells. So the higher DNA damage and the lower telomerase levels in women also had weakened cognitive ability. So we're hurting a lot of women with the therapy. Now, would we consider other therapies? The answer is no. No, because once we say that there is a therapy that we want, that's all we do, and we don't do anything else. Even if there are other therapies that are less expensive, they're more natural, non-toxic, they don't have a chance of getting accepted through the FDA and through their drug trials because there's so much competition from the existing pharmaceutical companies, and they control everything. When I say everything, I mean they control everything. And finally, from Tulane University, a new study talking about the 45 million Americans living with irritable bowel syndrome. By the way, it's also called IBS. And there's nothing really that's being done to help these people until now, because adding glutamine, glutamine is amino acid, A-M-I-N-E, glutamine, it makes a huge difference. It's very beneficial for irritable bowel syndrome. And that was published in their journal, so I just thought I'd share that with you. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 22 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. We're going to hold till tomorrow our audio clip with John Perkins, a new one he just did at a TED Talk called An Economic Hitman Confesses. Now, I've heard him play his other ones, but this is brand new with all new information about his early upbringing, how he got into being this, and he actually names all the people that taught him and what they taught him and why he became this. Really interesting, because this is now virtually our entire foreign policy. Also, the real reasons good people fail, I'll hold that as well, because I'm going to give more time to our guests who will be coming up in just about 12 minutes from now. But we're going now to Richard. Richard Gale is executive producer and also for many years and also one of our scholars in residence. And we talk all the time, late at night, early in the morning. In fact, it was kind of funny. Before we moved out of our 83rd Street in Broadway, we had that wonderful 110-year-old building, and we had the top part of it. It's only 3 stories. And Richard and I's office was side by side there. And someone came by and beeped their horn, and I'm on the second floor, so I look out, and it was the summertime, and the guy says, Gary, said, I'm, you know, on my way home from downtown. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. When do you guys sleep? And it was funny. I says, when it's time, but it wasn't time. And Richard would frequently be over there working. So that's the kind of effort that we put into what we do because we're impassioned by it. But one thing that we are very impassioned by is seeing that the corporate conservative and liberal Democrat Republic establishment that controls virtually all the media is telling us what they believe should be the most important issues. And we took a look at those issues and we disagree with them. So we have issues that Richard's going to share with us now that we believe all independents and truly progressives should begin to talk about, become aware of. We're going to post articles on each one of these and that we're writing so that you're really up to date. Hi, Richard.
Good afternoon, Gary.
Richard, go through the 10 most important.
Well, go through a bunch of them. One of the things that's important to realize, a lot of this we've all heard. The thing is I think the information is out. We all know what, I think deep in our hearts, we all know what the correct thing is to do. We've heard of the issues I'll list many times before in alternative media or different voices have given some acknowledgement to it. But the real disconnect is just that we're not doing anything. We're not acting on it, or that these issues are just being framed in such a way that, yes, they're a problem, but, you know, it's not serious enough a problem that we really have to tackle it. And so some of them, one is just the overall control of lobbyists that have over the White House, federal agencies, all of our elected officials, and to the extent of it, we're just the average person, and it's not being addressed. It's just kind of doesn't really understand just how much the pharmaceutical company, the agrochemical industry, the healthcare insurance companies, Wall Street, the military industrial complex, fossil fuels, some of the biggest lobby groups like the Podesta Group, you know, Podesta being the one that was behind Hillary. He has the second largest lobby firm operating in Washington. He spends $7 million a year on lobbying. And now, of course, Silicon Valley. And we can't have a democracy if all the everything is being dictated by all these different interests. Who are paying massive, massive amounts and hundreds of millions of dollars over the course of a year to keep, to keep their reign on our legislators and the White House and federal agencies. And one that we don't hear about, interesting enough, is really the influence of foreign governments in the lobbying world and advancing their corporate interests here. It's not just American corporate interests. In 2016, there were $6 million spent by foreign companies, nations lobbying. Interesting enough, the United Arab Emirates was number one, along with South Korea. There was an analysis done since 2017, done by Open Secrets, analysis of the Foreign Agents Registration Act. $683 million has been spent by foreign nations to lobby us. And the list is kind of interesting. South Korea first, Japan, United Emirates, Israel, Ireland, China, the Cayman Islands, Bahamas, Saudi Arabia, and Canada. That's the order. So you have these, all the offshore islands, the Cayman Islands, the Bahamas, and the Marshall Islands being listed there as being the biggest contributors to, for the elite to be able to keep their money secret there and our government and our politicians not doing anything about it. Overall, our foreign policy, Trump's rhetoric was originally, I think, during the campaign, something in the right direction, that he would, at least he spoke about diplomacy and getting out of the business of regime change. Of course, that completely changed. But we still continue to have an economy that's very based so much like ancient Rome at the height of its imperium, where war is just simply good for business. And we increasingly are having an economy that's based on war. And unless that is completely ripped apart and dismantled, our roads will continue to collapse. Our infrastructure will just get worse. Our water, our utilities will all get worse. Even if we were to just take a small fraction of the money that's spent on the military-industrial complex and invest in infrastructure, we could at least get it out, stop being just a banana republic. Even though we all know the dangers Trump has done is in dismantling all the environmental conservation protections that we've had, there's still almost no effort being made to change that. This is another one of these kind of real disconnects. It's just a news headline, and there's just really very little effort, and you don't hear the Democrats really, they have no plan on reversing or what they can do. The other thing would be our corporate tax codes. Just increasingly more and more private companies are paying zero tax. I mean, here's Amazon that is on the cusp of becoming the world's first $1 trillion private corporation, didn't pay a dime in taxes in 2017. That should outrage us all. And even though, you know, the GOP and Trump says the statutory 35% tax rate is way too high. Of course, they've already reduced that. But the average company, Fortune 500 company, only pays, you know, under 20%. So if you look over just the what companies that didn't pay any taxes just in the last year would be General Motors, who are Packard, United Continental, E-Trade, Xerox, Pepco Holdings, and a whole list. Almost all your energy companies paid almost no taxes in the last several years, being Wisconsin Energy, First Energy, General Electric, American Electric Power, Duke Energy, none of them. But this is not new. This has been going on year after year, and still there's just this kind of a denialism about doing anything about it. You were speaking about our health crisis. There's certainly a disconnect here. We applaud ourselves and the advances we make in medicine, new discoveries, the next new drug that's coming on the market. More people are being covered by healthcare. Regardless of the failures or the faults of Obamacare, more people are being covered, and yet all the statistics show that the quality of the health of the average American continues to go downward. And that's because we have been in complete denial of making any kind of concerted effort in prevention or even creating some kind of an incentive base that would promote prevention. You just go to any hospital and have yourself admitted and look at the food that you're going to get along with your Jell-O and saltine crackers. What else have we got here?
That's more than enough to think on today. It's the things we're not paying attention to and doing nothing to constructively change. We're not looking to reinvent any of these fields that have failed the American people. They've only benefited those in control, the oligarchs and people behind the scenes. So each week we will bring additional topics that we believe let's start to pay attention, become educated on, because that's what we need to change for the future.
Very good.
Richard, look forward to having you on next week with more. Richard Gale, again, giving us a lot to think about. We never think about when a politician says something or a foreign policy is enacted, which government's behind that? How do they benefit from it? They do. They're there. We're just not aware of it. We're trying to make you aware. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a few comments, and then in about 7 minutes, we're going to go to our guests. Please stay with us.
Spark
Our guest in about 8 minutes from now, talking about the G5 technology and why we should be very, very concerned. But before then, in January, I'm doing a only one week retreat in a nice sunny environment. We'll have our great staff that many of you have benefited from. They come from all over the United States, a wonderful group of people. And if you'd like to join us, all new lectures, really new and important insights, quiet time, meditative, spending more time in silence, communing with nature, detoxing, cleansing, rejuvenating. And most importantly, do we come with the idea that we should be able to change so that more good things happen in our life, more happiness, less stress, less depression, less anxiety, less disease, more energy, more abundance of good health? That's the object of the exercise. Here are just a few testimonials of people who attended the last retreat and the outcome on the final day of just 1 week, what they had experienced.
This is Bill Thompson. I've been here at the villa for a week. I arrived in a wheelchair. I couldn't walk, diabetic nerve pain, diabetic neuropathy. My toes were turning blue. My doctors had recommended that I take opioids for the pain and just live with the fact that I'm going to be dealing with amputation. And that's my life was over. That's just dealing with it. Within 1 week, I'm now able to walk with some aid, but some help. It is getting better all the time. I'm able to get some feeling in my feet, and my toes are back to the natural color. And this is, again, in 1 week. The cuisine that Gary puts in front of us at every meal is unbelievable. I've had the opportunity to dine at the finest restaurants in the world, and nothing compares. I'm serious. It is positively brilliant. His interaction with everyone, including me, has made the difference. I'm not just a person here. I'm a person of importance. And Gary has been just, pardon me, a little choking up here a little bit. Gary's been just positively wonderful, and I do thank him so much. It's been a wonderful experience that I look forward to again and again. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Lori, and I just finished 2 weeks at Gary Knoll's retreat. Before I attend an event, I set goals, and one of my goals for this week was power walking. And I was very disappointed because before coming, I had an injury and I could barely move. But I had to be flexible and go gently, and I started walking 2 miles a day. And 2 days ago, I did 3.5 miles. Yesterday, I did 6 miles. And today, I did 8 miles. And being around 70 and 80-year-olds who walked more than that, or people who couldn't walk and were walking, I said, if they can do it, so can I. And I just decided to go for it. And it's such a good feeling. It's remarkable. The other thing is I've been on a mostly vegan plant-based diet for a very long time, but I was still, my sugar addiction was a demon for me. And this time I learned about loving yourself. If you love yourself, then you want to do the best for your health. And it changed the perspective of how to think about that addiction. I had already given up sugar before coming here for several months and lost 10 pounds, but that really helped to reinforce how I'm going to continue at home. The other big piece for me was, there's a lot of laughter here. It's really a lot of fun. But it was about life energy. And I've been challenged. One of my challenges is talking too much, and I've been aware of that, and I actually went to Women's Circle and sit in circle with a talking stick. And actually, the staff here wouldn't know it, but it has improved some, but not enough. And Gary holds very high standards here, and he really knows what heals nature and silence. And by being more in silence, it's calming and restful. And there, there is a lot of laughter here, but there's also a calm, positive energy, because that's what Gary insists on here. And the staff is helpful, but there's no drama, and there's no little, I don't want to. Everybody just serves because they care about each other. The people here care. They care about people. They care about animals. And I was very grateful the first week that my daughter agreed to come. And sharing this experience with her, it was really a blessing. There are many people here with family members, and to share it together is very special. She has had some health challenges, and I feel that by being here, she has some gifts and other possibilities if she chooses to use them. Because for a long time, since I met Dr. Robert Mendelson and started listening to Gary Null,
those are just a couple. And by the way, we followed up with Bill Thompson. He was going to have his legs amputated. He was lucky to be alive. He had been in the hospital repeatedly. He has now gained back almost 15 pounds. He no longer suffers from the pain that keeps him awake. He's actually walking. So we're very, very happy for his progress. Look forward to seeing him again. So if you'd like to join us for the starting the second Sunday in January for 1 week, a week that could improve, challenge, or change your life, give Luann a call. Luann is on the phone now. Luann? All right, she's not on there. Then let me give you Luann's phone.
Here I am. Here I am.
Did you take a nap, Luann?
No, I wasn't beeped in.
All right.
All right. My number is 903-881-7008. Again, it's 903-881-7008. Shaping up to be, Gary, just one of your best retreats ever. We've got some fabulous people coming down, people with some challenges, people who've been to retreats before who want to work on a little bit deeper level. It's for everybody. Everyone who wants to be happy and healthy. And everyone deserves that.
And the woman is right. There's a lot of laughter because we grow with laughter. So, Luann, give your number again, please.
Surely. It's 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. Give me a call. I screen everyone to make sure it's the right event for you, and so I can give you all the details. Give me a call.
Good. We have two spots open. That's it. It's filled up. I just want to also mention that before I hire someone locally, I always try to find if there's someone in the audience that I could also hire. I probably have 50 employees right now in different places that came from this audience. They wanted to change, and now they're happy. They're doing work that's meaningful. I have a position open. It's a salary and free, you know, rent and utilities and internet and DirecTV, et cetera. Working with animals. It's about 3 to 4 hours work a day, 6 days a week. If that interests you, go to Joe. That's who you communicate with in our office, New York. And to get to Joe, you can simply call 646-926-5422 and ask for Joe. Let's now go over and say hello to my guest. You heard her in her TED Talk earlier this week, 2 days ago, and she is now in Washington, D.C., Devra Davis, and she's a highly distinguished medical researcher and epidemiologist and health activist, and she served as an advisor on chemical safety to the Department of Health and Human Services and the CDC and the UN and the European Environmental Agency and the World Health Organization and other national and international bodies. And currently she is the founder and president of the Environmental Health Trust, the world's only nonprofit that conducts high-level scientific research on environmental health hazards while communicating the same to governments and local communities and educators. She holds degrees from the University of Pittsburgh, and where she later founded the School Center for Environmental Oncology, received her doctorate from the University of Chicago, and an additional degree in public health from Johns Hopkins, And she's taught at Hebrew University Medical School. She's also taught in Turkey at the Mayas Medical School, Mount Sinai, Oberlin, and Carnegie Mellon Universities. She's published over 200 scientific peer-reviewed papers and is the author of several important books, including The Secret History of the War on Cancer and Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation. The Environmental Health Trust website is ehtrust.org. Nice to have you with us today.
It's lovely to be back. Lovely to be back, Gary.
Thank you. Everyone should by now be aware that overuse and the way we use our mobile phones is unhealthy. Whether people want to change their behaviors and the way they use their phones is another matter. But now with the rollout of the new Generation G5 towers, it's being publicized everywhere as a good thing, which will be peppered across entire cities, within neighborhoods, and eventually even rural towns and communities. We're going to be forced to live in the vicinity of high electromagnetic frequency radiation and exposure, whether or not we want to. And in my opinion, this is a criminal activity. It provides absolutely no real and sustainable benefit or improvement to anyone's life unless you have invested in G5 technology. There is less health and environmental information about G5 dangers made public in the media than handheld electronic devices. So please take your time and share with us the important scientific research confirming that G5 is a terrible idea and will increase our already existing epidemics in cancer, autoimmune disease, mental health, and behavioral disorders. The forum is yours.
Thank you so much, Gary. Now, let's be clear about something. There are right now no 5G phones that you can buy at this moment. They don't exist. The reason is, in order for them to really work, you need to have a network built. And what's going on now in many states is that they're getting a carte blanche to build a system that has never existed in human history that will connect your phones, games, videos, toothbrushes, babies, temperature, breath and movement monitors, dishwasher and digital assistants all together in the Internet of Things. There are huge concerns about personal security, which you're giving up when you allow these connections to take place. But regarding the health impacts, there really are substantial scientific published studies that indicate that this has important biological effects. In fact, originally, 5G was developed for the Defense Department because it can be used successfully to detect things that we can't otherwise detect, including, by the way, it can be used to detect early forms of cancer that may form just under the skin. So that's one of its beneficial uses. The idea that we're going to take something that can pick up small growing cancers and blanket our cities with this exposure makes no sense. And so that's why I'm part of a growing number of experts in this field of bioelectromagnetics that have signed a petition to the United Nations, led by the efforts of Joel Moskowitz at Berkeley and others. We have signed on saying we need a moratorium on 5G, because what 5G will do is install a system that has never been evaluated for its impact on the environment and public health. And let me give you some examples of what we do know. Yes, it can detect millimeter, microscopic size cancer growth early. But what we also know is that it resonates with, that is, it can cause the cells to vibrate with your sweat ducts. You have millions and millions of sweat ducts in your body. Now, what's wrong with that? Well, it happens to be the basis for a weapon that has been developed by the Defense Department that you can find on our website at ehtrust.org, a crowd control device. I think this is not a bad idea to keep it restricted to that kind of use. The difference between the 5G and the weapon and the 5G that will be in your home is power. Okay, so the 5G that will be proposed for your home is to have much less power, but it can be changed. and we don't have any control over who may get access to change it when and where. And that's a very big concern. In addition, Israeli scientists who showed that it resonates with the sweat duck demonstrated this and raised concerns about this, Professors Yuri Feldman and Paul Ben-Ishai, have also raised questions about its longer-term biological effects. For example, what if you are, like many of us, one of those who didn't get the message about sunbathing early on, and you have precancerous cells just under your skin? Those could be accelerated in growth by exposure to 5G. It's an entirely plausible thing. But what we do know from published studies is that 5G alters the growth of bacteria. Now, that's a pretty fundamental thing. You alter bacterial growth. You can speed it up. You can speed up the growth of cancer cells. That's not something we want to play around with. And what we believe that 5G needs to be restricted to military uses until they can figure out how to wire it and how to reduce exposures basically to zero when it comes to what's going into our homes. There are studies that you know we've talked about before that I mentioned in my TED talk, and I would encourage people to look for that at TEDx Jackson Hole, where we have clear evidence that cell phone radiation damages sperm. And not only does it damage the quantity of sperm, the count of sperm, the quality of sperm, how well it can swim, and ultimately, it has an effect on fertility. This is a very serious problem for all of us because right now, there's a growing number of couples in this country that are unable to have children when they want to. And we don't know all the reasons for this. We do know that there are a number of different factors. Some have nothing to do with cell phone radiation. But we also know that the Cleveland Clinic and the Mayo Clinic advise men who want to father healthy children to get the phones off their bodies. And I think we've talked about this before. Again, it's on our website in numerous places. But phones all come with warnings buried inside that advise you to keep them off the body. And that's why recently the French have recalled phones that have been found to exceed the test limits. Now, those test limits that were established for phones are older than many of your listeners. Would you want to fly in an airplane with 30-year-old test standards? I don't think so. Why are we allowing billions of young people and smaller people around the world to be using devices that have never been tested for their long-term safety? It makes no sense. I think what we have to recognize is that with phones today, we are where we were with cars in the 1960s. There are many uses that have proved essential. It's not that we're going to go back on all of them. But, as you indicated in your opening, the addiction to the devices has really undermined the fabric of our lives. Families are not able to have dinner together. People can't have conversations with their best friends anymore without being interrupted. We have allowed our personal lives to become interrupted by a well-designed and programmed set of software that makes you feel anxious if you haven't had enough likes for the day, that really creates a very attractive, compelling reason that you have to keep checking, as many people do, more than 100 times a day to see if anybody's done anything or to see what new cat trick somebody has put on the internet. So we're living in a life with an unprecedented level of exposure. And interestingly, the people who developed the technology are beginning to speak out about some of its darker sides. And we see not only the more widely discussed evidence that Bill Gates' family would not allow their children to have phones until they were 14, or that Steve Jobs banned them from his family when he had young children, or that the majority of people who work in Silicon Valley who have taken the time to have children send those children to schools like Waldorf schools that do not allow any devices for the children, but also require that parents agree to limit their own use of these things. How many times have you looked at a young parent out in a supermarket or something, and they're kind of harried because that's the nature of being a young parent, and you look and you see they're on their phone, the child is looking quite unhappy, and there's a failure to connect between the parent and the child. Recent studies have shown that parents who spend more time on their phones have young toddlers with delays in speech. These kids are not learning to speak because the parents are not responding to their young children in the way that people have done for eons. You're supposed to babble back to babies and little and toddlers. You're supposed to pay attention and look them in the eye. And we have a generation that's growing up without that attention and therefore is lacking the empathy that we want to cultivate in children at a young age so that they learn how to share their toys and think about the other person, something that some of us still have to work on.
Regarding mobile phones, a recent study from the Swiss Tropical and Public Health Institute reconfirmed the relationship between EMFs, electromagnetic field exposure, from wireless communication devices, especially mobile phones, and the quality of memory performance in adolescence, what you were just discussing. What people often forget is that it's not simply the daily use of mobile phones or being exposed to other sources of RF or EMF radiation, but it is the cumulative use over the course of weeks, months, and years that most threatens our physical and mental health. We're having an epidemic of ADHD conditions in children and teens, and yet their cell phone use is not being considered.
You're absolutely right. And we're starting to see, as the Swiss study indicated, the results of what's called a longitudinal analysis, where they follow kids over a period of time and check on how they're doing. And what we've seen in that study in particular was to look at adolescents and to actually determine that there is a significant impact on their ability to remember things. Interestingly, they respond faster. They're faster, okay? They've learned how to get like that, but they make more mistakes. Think about that the next time you're driving. The cumulative exposure to microwave radiation from phones was associated with a significant decrease in memory performance over a year. And by the way, a stronger decrease was observed in those who were right-sided. We don't know why or what that means. I think it was just perhaps because the majority of them were. But the Swiss study that you're talking about looked at cumulative exposure to the brain using a very sophisticated model and then applied that model to the reported information that the children provided about their use, and then also looked at the actual data that they had from phones and looked at the characteristics of these kids in terms of physical activity and the number of days they drank alcohol and all those things that are relevant and important, because maybe you just had a what we call a confounder. Maybe all these kids that had bad memory were starting to drink. But this study was unique in that it not only had self-reported data on calls, but it had independent operator-recorded data, so they could estimate the exposure that actually took place and not just what you remember is your exposure, because that's a big problem. We have called with my colleagues who are working with the World Health Organization for industry to provide the data. Give us the data on operator use so that we can have a more detailed study. It's incredible to me that in the United States today, there is no cooperation with this industry to get the data so that independent scientists could do the evaluation. It ought to be an imperative, and parents ought to be demanding that we have access to that kind of information. But what the Swiss study showed is that the cumulative exposure to microwave radiation from cell phones actually affects the way the brain works to remember figures. It's called figural memory. Now, of course, the scientists who wrote this say this is not definitive evidence and we have to look further, et cetera, et cetera. But they hedge it by saying we don't know which brain processes could be affected or what mechanisms may play a role. But the final sentence I will read to you. Potential long-term risk can be minimized by avoiding high brain exposure situations, such as occur when using a mobile phone with maximum power close to the ear because of, for example, bad network quality. Let me translate that. When you have one bar, you don't use your phone unless it's a true emergency, because when you have one bar, your phone will go to max power. When you're in a car, if you have your phone on, which I don't advise, and it's not going through the car antenna, then it will go to max power every time the phone senses you're moving from one cell area to another. That means that you're holding that device next to you, and it's going to max power. A recent study released from the California Department of Health just this week, which has received no media attention, the lead author was Stephen Wall, W-A-L-L. And what that study showed is that using phones and tested by the California Department of Public Health, when the phones have a weak signal, can give you 10,000 times more exposure to microwave radiation.
Well, that's extremely serious. I'm going to invite you back for a full hour on our Progressive Commentary Hour because it gives more time to discuss this, and we have a lot more to discuss on the psychological epidemics that we're seeing and how this plays out, not just with your cell phone, but also with other sources of electromagnetic fields. So I thank you very much for coming on today, and I look forward to an extended conversation.
Gary, let me also mention Americans for Responsible Technology, a very important group that has formed to provide information to people across the country, and we're working with them and others so that citizens have a toolkit of what they can present to their local officials who are just overwhelmed because the technical information is so complicated that it's very easy for people to just roll their eyes and say, hey, I don't really care. And that's really going to be a big mistake because this is a matter that affects the future of our species.
We appreciate that, and we will go into this in greater depth very shortly. Dr. Devra Davis, D-E-V-R-A Davis, and we will have her back. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.
But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how.